calling on communities, we are working with municipalities to ensure that the electricity theft is minimized and hopefully completely done away with, so that the integrity of our distribution network can be maintained at a level that we would want it to. The issues around the customer being central to our operations is important. We have seen an increased cooperation from key customers being mostly our industrial and big intensive energy users, as well as from our residential customers, particularly in times of constraints that we have experienced in this previous financial year on our network. We do want to take the opportunity to extend our appreciation and gratitude to all our customers for having given the call to reduce demand on the system. We have a responsibility to ensure that we continuously build the capacity, human capital in Eskom. We have made great strides in building skills over and above the representation in this graph. Eskom has introduced programs and initiatives to build the core skills required to ensure the sustainability of the organization. We have introduced a program of top engineers who are the best engineers. We try to think that they are the best engineers in Eskom and arguably in South Africa. Now, these engineers will form part of the core engineering consulting wing within Eskom itself. World-class welding program has already been completed, the first phase, and is continuing. Specialized training for power station operators who are currently training overseas, as well as training for an engineering master's program. So we have to put a lot of effort in building capacity, skills, and new qualifications within Eskom. We also intend to build more core skills in the gas sector, as well as in the construction space by deploying individuals to our new projects. Already, a number of our own staff has been deployed in the various new build sites from B2P, Kusile to Ingula, and are working parallel to the contractors in the transference of skills. This is important to ensure that out of the new build project, one of the legacies is a new capacity of skills that can be deployed elsewhere in the country, even if it is outside of Eskom. I have referred to the policy of keeping the lights on and the imperative that it was at the time. We have reported in the winter outlook report previously the challenges that we experienced. We still have serious challenges with our supply to meet an ever-increasing demand. Those graphs tell a story between summer and winter, and we might later on give you some more insight into the summer plan that we already started as of the 1st of September. Despite this tight supply system, we do have a strategic plan to coincide with the commercial operation of Midupi in the second quarter of next year. We need to highlight though that this tight supply system has resulted in an increased spend on OCGTs, which has doubled from the financial year previously of 2013 to 2014. investigating and indeed implementing mitigating strategies to reduce the reliance on OCGTs, which is fueled by diesel, which is an expensive fuel to drive our those combined gas turbines. The program for the acceleration of our generation performance has also identified the issue of reducing reliance on OCGTs as a priority. And we are doing some work to tap into the IPP space. You will, as you will hear later on, some of the independent power producers that we have now connected to the grid, particularly through the renewable IPPs, resulting in over 1,300 megawatts being available. And we continue to do so, as we participate with the Department of Energy into the window 4 of the next phase of the RE IPPs. Other supply levers such as gas are being explored. Currently, gas IPPs account for about 300 megawatts. We have now increased it to 600 megawatts as we move into the summer period. We also face challenges in the year under review pertaining to coal quality, particularly in March 2014. You are aware that this resulted in rotational load shedding for about 14 hours. We have since reviewed our mitigating plans to ensure that we present this act of rotational load shedding from recurring. And you will realize later on that we are now talking about the need for a managed load reduction, which can give some predictability to users to and can enable them to plan. We are doing so on the realization that the system will remain constrained. It's a reality that we will need to live with for some time. We will manage the system to ensure that we avoid at all costs the collapse of our grid. On the demand side, demand side management is one of the levers used to make to balance our shortage of capacity, particularly during peak. Eskom offers have resulted in about 410 megawatts capacity being available during evening peak demand. This is the year under review. However, we do have some challenges as a result of insufficient funding for further progress within the IDA, and we are engaging with the DOE to seek support to can continue with further demand side levers in this regard. On the delivery capacity expansion or the new build program, the projects include the new build itself, the refurbishment projects, which are the return to service of our old mothballed stations, which covered about 23 units. The new build itself consists of Dupi, Kuside, and Ingula. If we focus briefly on Midupi, you will see then that we had some challenges in the year under review, basically welding challenges, that has resulted in the pressure test failing quite repeatedly. This have now been addressed and sorted out, and we are on track for the targeted first synchronization of Unit 6 by the second half of 2014, as I indicated previously. We have also learned various lessons with regards to the construction of mega projects such as Midundu. And we have already started to ensure that the lessons learned on Midupi are being relayed to Kusile and Ingula to avoid duplication of errors. Other capital expansion projects, particularly on our transmission networks, have seen a capacity of just over 17,000 megawatts being brought in, 9,700 kilometers of transmission, new transmission lines, and 42,000 MVAs. To date, we have added about 5,000 kilometers and 27,000 MVAs respectively, indicating that we still have a long way to achieve our targets, but there's very good progress, particularly in terms of the expansion of our transmission network. I've indicated earlier on that we have been able to successfully connect new IPPs on the renewable energy side, and this has meant that we have had to increase the capacity of our transmission lines to enable those new connections into the grid, as well as to increase the capacity of our grid to transport the energy that is now being supplied by the renewable energy private producers into the country. We continue to expand that particular program to ensure that there is access to the grid by the private sector. And this would include the private sector beyond the renewable energy. We envisage that we envisage a bigger role for the private sector, and we are already in consultation with the Department of Energy, planning the expansion of our national grid in areas where we envisage that the new IPPs will then be brought into play. On the environmental issues, we are increasing our footprint in the renewable energy space, as I said. The Sarawen wind farm is progressing well and will be commissioned later this year. There are challenges as well. We have met most of the emission standards for our coal-fired power plants, with the exception of Creel. Some of the higher emission stations will eventually exceed license requirements and would require a major refurbishment by way of retrofitting of technology that would reduce that atmospheric footprint and ensure that we comply with the new standards. We have estimated that we might require just over 70 billion to retrofit some of our non-compliant stations. We will also require extensive outages to carry out this work. We have jointly with the Department of Environmental Energy looking at the means of extending the period within which we should be compliant to ensure that we are given enough time and space to mobilize the necessary funding whilst we are still under a very constrained supply system to bring in new capacity, so that as we take out those units, we have replaced the capacity that we would otherwise not be available for the time of that outage. On our coal and water resources, we have set the target of 42 stop days as a mitigating factor for some of the challenges we experienced previously, such as the wet coal and industrial action. We are meeting our targets as illustrated in the graphs. We have put a strategy to optimize our coal plus mines. These are the mines that are jointly owned by Eskom and the private sector. There's a coal optimization strategy that is in place and under implementation to ensure that we get the maximum efficiencies out of those mines and therefore reduce the cost of primary energy, which has been an issue that the regulator has been raising almost every year. We are progressing with the finalization of the long-term coal supply agreements for Kusile in time to ensure that once Kusile comes on stream, there is adequate supply of coal. The coal to rail migration plan is progressing progressing well. Eskom is looking at optimizing the coal logistics to reduce the burden of trucking coal on roads and minimizing the damage, both environmentally as well as on the infrastructure of our roads in those municipalities that the mines are located. We are looking at optimizing the logistics solutions available, such as the rail and the conveyors. The IPPs, I've already touched on some of this, just to indicate that the IPP procurement has increased by 4.4% between the previous financial year and the year under review. We are going to see an increase as well in this space of independent power producers as part of a plan to ensure that we create additional space for the participation of the private sector in the energy supply sector. The transformation issues remain at the core of what we do. I've indicated the issues around electrification, the impact that has on the social quality of life as well as on the local economies in areas where we are supplied. There are a number of corporate social investment projects that we have also undertaken in the year under review, and we continue to implement. The procurement area is also part of the components of our transformation strategy. And procurement equity and localization ensures that our spend is directed to building a broad-based economic sector which benefits a wide spectrum of people. We have increased our spend, as you can see, we have increased our spend on BEE far above our target. However, we still need to put more effort in respect of black youth and disabled people. There are some challenges that we have indicated to both our ministry around the exemptions that have lapsed in terms of the triple PFMA, which have basically removed our ability to, amongst others, to set aside certain procurement services for goods, services to black new entrants. But we are engaging with the DPE and with the Ministry of Finance to find ways of supporting us in increasing the transformation agenda and the program that is meant to benefit our local communities. I think I've indicated that there's a lot around the procurement issue that's right. Employment equity as well remains a focus for us. You'll see that we have taken a step to increase the employment of the disabled members. We have also taken a decision to, whilst we are keeping our headcount to 42,000, we will continue to look for opportunities to meet the targets in terms of both racial and gender equity. Chairperson, I'm going to stop there to give the financial director to take you through the actual financial statements for the year.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of our financials, when we reported our half-year results in September 2013, we did indicate that most of our profits and revenue are higher in winter in the first half of the year, primarily due to greater demand for electricity, seasonal tariff adjustments, and a lower maintenance on our plant. So in the second half of the year, we actually see a much lower profit at 7 billion rand. And these profits, we must indicate that they are reinvested in the company to repay our debt and also assist with the capital expansion program. So our revenues have actually increased to 139.5 billion rand, representing an 8% increase of from the tariff itself, tariff determination, but also a greater demand for electricity. We've also seen that our revenue growth has been offset or eroded rather by the increase in primary energy costs, which I will give more detail in later slides. If you look at our net fair value on financial instruments, this is mainly due to the rolling of our foreign exchange contract, which varies from period to period due to the timing of our procurement contract. We do for some of our materials from foreign suppliers, and therefore we have to take out forward cover. We also have seen a gain on our embedded derivatives of 2 billion rand, which has really boosted our profits of 7 billion rand, up from 5 billion rand in the previous financial year. Of particular note as well, Chair, is the net interest and finance charges, which is the cost of funding from our borrowing progress, which, as you will see, increases with the borrowing plan that we currently have, which is in support of our capital expansion progress. A point to highlight, Chairperson, is that if you look at the next slide, we currently account for our assets at historical cost basis, and therefore our profits are really reported on that basis. But if we were to value our assets at depreciated replacement cost, which is really the true economic value and is in fact the basis on which the regulator calculates our tariff, we would actually have reported a loss of about 12 billion rand. So from our perspective, Chair, we as Eskom believe that we do require a rate of return on assets that is would enable us to maintain our assets and be able to replace them over time. And from a regulatory perspective, appropriate return on assets should really be a key building block to cost-reflective tariffs. The regulator has calculated a cost of capital of about 7.65%. We do know that there are different views in terms of what is the right return and that an appropriate cost of capital for Eskom. But we believe that if you look at that slide there, you'll notice that our current rate of return on assets is currently at 0.53. That is the blue bars on the slide. And therefore, continuing with inadequate returns would result in further erosion of Eskom's financial position. So it is quite imperative that we move to the tariffs that reflect the true cost of supply of electricity for the long-term sustainability of the industry. Moving on to the next slide, Chair, our sales are much lower than what we had forecast for the NERSA application at about 9.5 terawatts, which is a significant decline, representing close to about 5.8 billion rand in revenue than what we had targeted for. However, year on year, we have seen a mere 0.6% increase, primarily due to a significant decline that we have seen in the mining sector, the platinum and gold mine, mainly due to the long and protracted strike, but as well as on the gold mining side, the persistent lower commodities that the gold mines have seen. We've also seen a significant decline in our international sales from our same contracts that we have when those customers, international customers, have now are now reliant on their own generation capacity. We've seen no growth at all from our municipalities. We supply our municipalities in bulk. 42% of our sales come from the municipalities. So we've seen no growth at all from there. However, these are also offset. These sales decline have been offset by slight increases in the industrial customers, but also the residential and other commercial customers, which represent about 13% of our total sales. If we move on to our electricity operating expenses on the next slide, you will notice that our operating costs of electricity are higher than what we have targeted for, at 13% higher, mainly due to the use of the open cycle gas turbines. As the chief executive has indicated, given our tight reserve margin, Eskom has had to run the open cycle gas turbines above typical load factors to ensure continual supply of electricity for the country, but at the same time continuing with our maintenance program. And as a result, our maintenance costs have also increased year on year. But also our employee benefit costs, although our manpower count is lower than what we had targeted, the cost has actually increased mainly due to the focus on maintenance, as we have to do maintenance as well over the weekends, and therefore the overtime cost will have increased significantly. We've had to increase our impairment provision on our bad debt, mainly due to the increase that we are seeing in the municipal debt, and we do have a slide later on to show. On the next slide, if we move to a further breakdown of our primary energy costs, it clearly indicates the significant cost. And the breakdown, if I can just highlight, is that if you look at the generation cost, excluding our open cycle gas turbine, which are primarily the reason for the increased cost in primary energy cost. On average, we're seeing an increase in coal cost of about 5.78% on a rent per ton basis year on year, except at one or two power stations where we have seen a significant increase due to production problems linked to the colliery. We've also seen a shift in the use of the short-term and medium-term contracts that we had to use, particularly for our return to service stations that were previously mothballed, because those are not linked to the cost plus mine, and therefore we use our short-term and medium-term contracts. Just in addition, although we have seen some better coal quality than what we had anticipated, we've also seen higher burn rates due to more coal input in some of the power stations for the same output, really due to the technical problems that we've indicated we have with some of our aging plants. If we move on to the next slide, Chair, the next slide is just an indication of our hedging policy. As we indicated, we do hedge our exposure to foreign exchange commodity prices as well as interest rates. So on the embedded derivatives, as I indicated, that we have seen a profit this year of 2 billion rand, particularly due to the exchange rate and interest rate fluctuations. And as we have indicated in the past that we do still have one contract that has an embedded derivative, and is currently with the regulator for review to make sure that we get the price correct from that agreement. However, you will notice that in the previous financial year, the loss in 2012-13 was mainly due to the decision at the end of the financial year to account for the full term of the underlying negotiated price. So our foreign currency and commodity hedging, as I indicated, that we do hedge that exposure. We use our foreign exchange contracts with short-term maturities, and they do roll over at maturity, as well as the cross-currency swaps that we have. The bottom, the middle slide is really just an indication of the value of our exposures and fluctuations on our balance sheet in exchange rates, which shows that it is really vital for us to hedge our exposure on the balance sheet. if you look at the next slide, this is really just an indication of what sits in our balance sheet. The significant portion of that being our assets. We increased our asset base by 60 billion rand year on year. Also, likewise, our borrowing program, which is currently supporting our capacity expansion program, has increased by 58 billion rand, and therefore has resulted in a debt equity ratio of 2.06 compared to the previous financial year of 1.84. Looking at the next slide as well, in terms of our funding plan, Eskom has identified and largely secured the funding for the current capacity expansion program, with 90% of that being secured from the original borrowing program that we had of 300 billion rand. However, with an 8% tariff determination, we intend to increase that by additional 50 billion rand to make sure that it covers us to the end of the MYP period. The previous borrowing program was from April 2010 to March 2017, and up to the end of the MYP period, we had to increase that. And therefore, we're in the process of identifying further sources from the additional 50 billion rand. The next slide is really just a very good indication of the long-term maturity profile that we have on our loans. And it's really an indication that, as you can see, most of our loans will be repaid by 2052. And from our perspective, it's a good indication that we need to make sure that we maintain our assets because we need to generate adequate revenue over a very long time from those assets. Essentially, that's what we want to highlight. We do have a significant debt on the balance sheet of 255 billion rand at the end of March 2014, and it will increase by the end of the MYPD3 in March 2018 to about 300 billion as part of the current borrowing program. On our debt and debt maturity and leverage, these are the key financial ratios that the investor community and the rating agencies would look at to assess our credit profile at Eskom. The gross debt to EBITDA ratio, the free funds from operation as a percentage of gross debt, and the debt service cover ratio. You will see that on the slide, although the blue graphs indicate that there has been some slight improvement year on year, and we're still significantly negative in terms of the investment grade status, which is indicated by the brown graph there. So from our perspective, we need to make sure that Eskom is sustainable and that we do not get any further downgrades, which will have a significant negative impact on us. If we move on to the Eskom's credit ratings, these ratings are at the 31st of March 2014, and they really reflect the highly leveraged financial profile of Eskom, our execution risk associated with the capacity expansion program, and a degree of regulatory uncertainty in terms of cost-reflective tariffs. And this is really just some of the things that the rating agencies do highlight as an area of concern. I think we all know that in mid-June sometime after the sovereign was downgraded, because Eskom's rating is also intrinsically linked to the sovereign, the rating actions followed on Eskom, where we saw Fitch, in fact, although maintaining the current status, but moving Eskom to a negative outlook, but also Standard & Poor as well, changing their rating of Eskom to BBB-, but also putting us on credit watch for the next 90 days. So that really started on around 19th of June. And from our perspective, the 3 months to 19th of September are quite important for Eskom to make sure that we don't get a significant downgrade. And as the Chief Executive has indicated, there are plans in place working with the Inter-Ministerial committee in government to assist Eskom with the financial solution. If we move on to the summary of our cash flows, our capital expenditure, as I indicated, our capital expenditure is quite significant. We spend close to about 58 to 60 billion rand on a yearly basis. if you look at our cash flows, you will realize that although we generated cash from operations and had a balance at the beginning of the year, this is not sufficient to support our investment activity. Thus, we continue to rely actually on borrowing for the balance of our investment activities, which is highlighted there by the 55 billion rand of investment from investment activities, while at the same time we continue to repay our debt. So we've already started repaying our debt. So as you can see, that what we generate from our operations is not sufficient to carry out for our additional investment in investments as well as repayment of our debt. So essentially, in summary, what we believe is critical for us as Eskom is really making sure that we balance security of supply as Eskom's financial sustainability. We need to continue to be a going concern, but also balancing issues that we have around environmental compliance and being able to responsibly manage the trade-offs and risks that we see in the business. So the revenue shortfall that has been created by the MYP determination does have some serious consequences for Eskom's business into the future if left unabated. So our key to success in terms of our appropriate return on assets in the long term is to obtain adequate funding and to address the liquidity shortfalls that we see in the short term. There is a response plan that we have put in place to deal with the liquidity challenges and the long-term financial challenges and the financial sustainability. And it includes investigating alternative sources of funding, which includes equity and equity-like instruments. It includes our business productivity program that we have committed to over the MYPD period, and also looking at our capital expenditure program to make sure that we reprioritize the strategic projects that are key for us and the country, and make sure that we manage within our means. We will explore additional borrowing program if we can. However, the ability to borrow is really constrained by the rating actions that we anticipate. We have applied to NERSA, and we did have received the RCA adjustment of 7.8 billion rand, as we are all aware. However, we need a combination of solutions to make Eskom financial sustainable. So not one solution would assist us. It is a combination of all of them that will assist us. So financial sustainability could not be achieved through efficiencies alone. And we therefore need to make sure that we need to the long term, the cost effective tariffs in the long term. Chair, that's the end of our financial presentation.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I think by way of a conclusion, we just need to emphasise the importance that we put on safety at the center of our operations, that we will not sacrifice safety for anything, and that as we implement the ESCOM's mandate through the capacity expansion strategy, the generation sustainability strategy, skills building, transformation, environmental compliance, we will put safety at the core of everything that we do. We just need to indicate that as a response to the impact of the MYP3 determination, we have had to relook at our business model, and we have put in place a plan to ensure that we are able to recover from the gap, the funding gap that has resulted from that, as the FT has indicated. At board level, a resolution was taken to form a special committee, a joint board and management committee called the Eskom Emergency Task Team, which is chaired by the chairman of the board and specifically tasked with developing a strategy, a response strategy, to ensure that we close the funding gap, we increase our capacity for supply, that is asset creation. We focus on the recovery of the performance of our generation fleet, as well as looking at other clean sources of energy, and specifically looking at gas as an alternative to some of the expensive fuel that we have been using in the past. That work has progressed to a fully fledged and comprehensive plan, as the FD has indicated, including various suites of options on the financial front, including things that ESCOM itself has to do and is already implementing in terms of the business productivity program, the target of saving or cutting off 60 billion of our expense budget in the remaining period of the MIPD3. ESCOM is also, as part of that financial sustainability plan, looking at optimizing our balance sheet to release value and as well as some liquidity that is currently in the balance sheet but not fully exploited. This would also involve looking at various options of drawing in the participation of private sector investment as part of that broad program. Clearly, issues around increasing our borrowing capacity, issues around seeking other funding solutions jointly with the Treasury are being explored. We have also, as part of the financial plan and the sustainability plan as a whole, taken measures to begin to arrest the decline of the performance of our generation fleet, as I have indicated earlier. We have put together a plan that is already in implementation that will see the restoration of the performance of that generation fleet of our power stations. This will require time and space. It will also require some resources. We are confident that with a concerted effort and a focus, we will begin to see the stabilization of that performance before we see an increase in the efficiency and therefore in the output of the power that we expect out of the current fleet. The third component is also crucial in terms of our ability to increase our capacity and our asset base. And this is the new build program I referred to earlier. Midupi, Kusile, and Ingula, which is not progressing as fast as we would have wanted to. There has been delays, as you may be aware. Some of them could have been avoided, but some of them are delays that are inherent in the project of this nature, including unforeseen industrial action that results in massive delays. And every day that is delayed adds a cost to the project. We have taken measures to minimize any further delays, and we are confident of our ability to deliver on the first synchronization of Unit 6 in December 2014, as I've indicated. The fourth lever that we have adopted as part of the ESCOM sustainability plan is the pursuance of gas as a fuel option. We are already in advanced stages of negotiations, particularly with the Mozambican counterparts to ESCOM, in securing gas that can then be piped through to our plants this side. We are looking at plans to convert our diesel-fired OCGT plants into gas-fired plants, particularly Ankerlech and Khoriko in the Western Cape. We are looking at other greenfield gas opportunities in the Mpumalanga area. And we are continuously in discussion with the Department of Energy to ensure that the necessary allocations are made in the revised IRP to enable ESCOM to implement these things. We have indicated that it's critical for ESCOM to ensure a balance between security of supply, asset creation, financial sustainability, and environmental compliance, and to responsibly manage the trade-offs that are required, some of which might mean some short-term pain that we need to take as we address the longer-term benefit for the country and for energy security. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We will now allow honourable members to raise questions and clarify certain issues and also inputs, because we strongly believe the success of ESCOM will not depend only on their plans, and it will depend on all of us to assist them to get out of this situation. We have heard they've been downgraded, and it's a concern because it will also affect their borrowing capacity. And with the country needing much energy to create jobs, we cannot afford to not to have an efficient ESCOM which will enable us to deliver what the people of this country are really desperately looking for. That's the creation of jobs and also expanding the economy or growing the economy. Let's get Mr. Mare, Honorable Mare, will be followed by Honorable Ranka.
Ranto.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Honorable Michaels will follow. Next to her, it will be him. And then, are you raising your hand, ma'am?
I am, yes, yes.
Oh, okay, yourself will follow. In that order, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start off by first complimenting the case of the youth program of ESCOM as excellence and preparing the youth for senior positions starting from the bottom as what they do actually with training purposes. I want to put three questions. Number one, it's in the connection with corporate social investment. It's been stated that they've been spending 132.9 million rand will be spent up to March this year. And they also given the number of projects, but they didn't highlight any projects. So I don't know what projects they've done. So I would like them to actually just highlight the committee here, what projects they have done. And I also want to make the following statement that it will still take years to electrify certain residential areas in municipalities. And, you know, it's quite awkward to stand up in the morning in the winter and you haven't got warm water. So is there one of these projects maybe linked to some panels where municipalities can actually benefit from actually providing low-cost housing in residential areas with some panels to get for people their warm and hot water in the winter? That's my second one. And, then I would like the acting CEO to comment for me on the article on page 2 this morning in the Burger, where contract was awarded and it was switched on the last minute to another company as far as the steam turbine is concerned for Cuba. I would like to know what's happening there. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to make a few comments before I start with my questions. The first is on the fleet that the CEO talks about. I had a question around that, that I heard that they've got a plan on their aging fleet, which I thought the CEO would be more specific on their plans, because those substations which I think he talks about those about substations that are in our areas that were meant then for supplying fewer people, but because of the influx in our areas, those substations, some of them cannot stand the demand. So I thought CEO will talk about them, and also it gave us little knowledge on how many of these substations around the country do we have in South Africa. Chair, also I wanted to have a suggestion that yesterday we had a workshop with the Treasury, and there we were asked to suggest on these SOCs and the departments for them to spend less on luxurious or luxurious issues or conferences, or spending a lot of money on hotels and whatever, but things that are unnecessary, and focus on service delivery issues so that we have less protests of people on the ground, because some of the things that are happening on the ground, it's because of the departments that are not delivering, but the people who are most affected are our councillors on the ground. And also, Chairperson, on what you have commented on, I really concur with your comment that you have just said. My first question now, Chairperson, is how far is Eskom in renegotiating pricing contracts with BHP? That's my first question. I'm not sure, but Chairperson, can I ask all seven of them? I've got
seven.
No, let's limit them to three.
Oh. The second one is, I understand that Eskom has signed IPPs with other countries. I just wanted to know, why are these IPPs signed over so many years? If they disappoint you in few years' time, because you signed a contract with them over 20 years, if I'm not mistaken, and they disappoint you in 5 years' time, you still have to stick with the contract, or maybe the law will not allow you to cut off their contracts, and maybe those contracts will end up also taking from the money that Eskom has for those contracts to be terminated. You see, when a contract is terminated before time, there is an additional amount that is always asked by those people. Can you explain to me, Eskom, as I'm just an ordinary member who is not sometimes not aware, or can't you, there are words that you or phrases that you said that I would not be able to follow. Just explain to us the impact of credit downgrading. Because I would not know what is credit downgrading, maybe. I would think that I know, and yet I do not know. What do you mean when you say you are credit downgraded? Can you explain that to us? I've got many of the questions. I'm just limited to three.
Thank you. If you can limit to three, perhaps if we have more time, we'll go for the second round.
Okay.
The next honourable member.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, my first question goes around coal and coal supply, we're especially, we're about to head into summer in the high salt, it means it's going to start raining. Now, one of the problems that we had was wet coal, causing major problems. What kind of systems have been put in place by Eskom to make sure that our coal isn't wet, and that we're keeping our coal dry? And also then, I'm sure Eskom would have seen the carte blanche expose that we all saw on Sunday evening. And one of the issues that came up quite strongly was the fact that the coal supply to Kusile and Surround and Kendall and all of those stations, everything is now coming to an end. And I see we've got enough coal contracted for the next 5 years. But where are we in terms of making sure that coal supply is secure? And also, where are we in terms of the negotiations for the Waterberg coal? Because there's so many conflicting reports, I think we need some clarity as to where we stand in terms of that. Also, the quality of that coal, because we know that the coal quality is also, we've used most of our good coal. Then, Chair, there's also a great discrepancy with regards to the tuner of Medupi, because we have Minister Lynn Brown saying in committee that we can look forward to the turn on in December. We have the CE sitting here today telling us the second half of the year and we'll have turn on. So I think we just need to make sure that the public understands exactly what switch on and what turn on and soft turn on and all of that is, so that come December, we don't have the country saying, hold on, we thought that Medupi would go online, because Medupi isn't going online in December. And I think we need to make that perfectly clear. We need Eskom to make that perfectly clear. Medupi does not go online in December. They have a soft turn-on. And I think the CE needs to explain to us exactly what that means, that we have a clear indication and that there's no discrepancy going forward. Then, Chair, something that I found quite disturbing in the presentation this morning, and I was at Medupi, as Eskom would know, I was there 2 weeks ago. And I was very disappointed that even though I'd done an application through Eskom to do oversight at Medupi, I wasn't allowed to. But nonetheless, I was in Ellis Rus and I was at Medupi and I was talking to a lot of people that work with Greenpeace and environmental agencies who are doing environmental studies on Medupi. Now, what I cannot understand, and it remains, it just blows my mind, is the fact that a project the size and the cost of Medupi is going up, and it's something that we as South Africans should actually be proud of, considering the engineering feat that Medupi is, that we don't have a flue gas desulfurization at Medupi, and yet we have one at Kusile. So what we've been told now from engineers at Medupi is that we can expect the flue gas desulfurization to be built, well, it commences building in 2018. But why does it not commence while the rest of the construction happens now? So we have to wait for that. So we have all of this kind of stuff going to our environment, poisoning the air around, very bad for local communities, and never mind that bad for our neighbouring countries. So that needs to be explained to me, especially considering in the presentation this morning, Eskom says by 2026, the national emissions, we will only be 57% compliant. Now, not only does that go against our own environmental regulations in South Africa, but it goes against every international environmental treaty I can think of. That's not something to be proud of, that in 2026, which is far in the future, we would have only reached 57% of our conditions. I think that's very worrying. Chair, and then the next thing that I thought was quite worrying as well, which I read in our documentation, was the projected shortfall of 225 billion. Now, I must say I do understand what the downgrading of your credit means to you. And I understand that it's now incredibly difficult for you to loan money, and I understand that your hedging funds and all of that now comes into question. But what does worry me is Ngula, Kusile, Medupi, we need at least 300 billion. We've got a shortfall of 225 billion. Can South Africans expect another electricity increase? If so, what are you going to be requesting? And what is the time period? Because people and business need to prepare themselves for these kinds of things. Thank you.
Next, another member.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As indicated, I'm not a member of this portfolio committee, so I kindly request to confine myself to issues relevant to why I'm actually here, and that's the issue of the municipality debts due to Eskom. I put in a question to the Minister of Culture in July, and I must say I almost fell off my chair when I received the response that our municipalities are owing Eskom over 10 billion rand. and 2.7 of those are in arrears of those debts, and I understand that the CEO and the finance manager in July expressed to the committee that they said, you know, there were serious concerns about this and the sustainability of Eskom in that regard, but that switching off of those expenses was the last resort. Now I understand that, and of course the ramifications being that they are a state-owned company and therefore at the back of their minds that development and service delivery remains a priority for them because of the shareholder. But in terms of managing debt now in general, but with a particular focus to the municipal debt, you admit on one hand that it's a problem and that you are not contemplating the drastic results. What measures are in place to actually sort this thing out? Because you, what has happened is that you've landed municipalities into a sort of, well, because indirectly we are shareholders at Eskom, we can take them for a ride. And in the greater scheme of things, this has got bad, bad outcomes for the taxpayer. Because when you're downgraded now and your debt and debt management is not looking good in light of this, all of this at the end of the day impacts negatively on the ordinary man in the street. And I think that we need details in terms of how you're actually going to manage getting this money back from these municipalities, the timeline that has been set for to now to March 2015. We need to get the specific details in how you're going to curb this. And then how are you going to manage in the future that you do not arrive at a point where these debts are so high? Because, Chair, what has happened is that everybody is saying municipalities are performing, but they are not, you know, servicing people as they should to the detriment of our own entities like Eskom. So I would really want Eskom to assist us in this regard to actually just find, you know, find a lasting solution to this perpetuating problem. And Chair, finally, I just want to watch and appreciate as well the issue of the youth program. I would want to find out further details of that, whether it's in-house, and if it's not in-house, to what extent does it reach out to other youth in the country, and what are the details of it. And I see that in one of the slides, you speak about the number of people in employment and how that number has gone down from 2013. So I'm just trying to balance the skills development and what I see to be a decrease in the number of employees that you have. So trying to find a balance, where are you? And the important issue, of course, is that to who do you then communicate this information to, that it remain exclusively for urban youth and so on, because we've got a serious problem of that these types of opportunities are not giving themselves to rural communities, which actually bear the most rural brunt of our daily struggles in the poverty. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for inviting the Energy Committee. As my colleague, I'm also not on the Public Enterprises Committee, but it is a great opportunity to quiz Eskom on a couple of issues which concern us in the Energy Committee as well. Clearly, we're in an electricity crisis at the moment, and I think that we've seen the first signs of that this year in terms of the load shedding that's taken place. Now, the two main causes of this, the one is obviously the delays in the new build program, which has been spoken about certainly by my colleague. The other problem, though, it seems to be in terms of the actual running of our existing coal-fired power stations. And there are huge amounts of unplanned outages that have in fact occurred, particularly this year. What this seems to indicate, and Eskom itself has even recognized that in terms of its change philosophy that I just read about this week, is that in fact they've run those too hard, and that a lot of those stations are in fact not able to produce at the level that they have been required to. What this means, though, is that we are going to have even less capacity then in the next 3 to 5 years than was originally planned for, given the change in Eskom's philosophy. Would you agree with that statement? And if that is the case, what are the plans then to make to address that shortfall from these existing coal-fired power stations? Does the energy department, for instance, have to then initiate some kind of a baseload procurement process to get more IPP baseload on stream within the next 3 to 5 years to make up for the shortfall that's going to come from our coal-fired power stations? I'd be interested to hear your comments on that. And given that we're going to have more procurement from IPPs, I was interested to read that DOE has approved an additional 1,457 megawatts in round three for the renewable energy IPP program, but no contracts have yet been signed. What are the reasons for those contracts not being signed? Because one of the reasons that I've heard that has been put forward is that the original cost estimates that ESCOM in fact gave the bidding companies around grid expansion and the cost for connecting them to the grid are in fact far higher now than were those original estimates from ESCOM. Is that in fact the case, and what is the reason for that? And why is it that the bidding company now has to endure those costs when in fact they never put that into the original bid because of estimates that ESCOM in fact gave to them initially? And what has been done to address that particular issue? Particularly given that, as far as I understand, the World Bank loan that was given to ESCOM included grid expansion, particularly for connecting renewable energy IPP projects. And what is the way to solve this issue now going forward? Because we cannot have a delay on energy that is ready to be connected to the grid, not being connected to the grid because of problems with ESCOM's bid estimates. So I'll be interested to hear your response on that. And then just lastly, on the municipal side, I think it's also interesting to know, we have heard a lot about the debt that municipalities owe to ESCOM, but ESCOM itself is responsible for over 40% of distribution as well. And I'd be interested to hear what your cost recovery is on your own distribution side and what kind of debt is owed to you from your own distribution side. So that will give us some sense of what the problems are in distribution as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Teddy.
Thanks, Sam. Three quick issues as well. There seems to be challenges in the area of procurement and asset management issues. And we are told that has also led to ongoing investigations in those areas. If and just here with the committee, what is the situation regarding that particular issue? I'm happy that with all the challenges that you have been sharing with us, including those that some of the honorable members have been highlighting, you still managed to keep the lights on. And I'm also happy that there are quite a number of programs that we are doing in the area of young people, the issue of the incorporation of people with disabilities. But I'm also interested in the gender balance at the level of senior management, the representation of male and female, where are we, including people with disabilities. You can just share with the committee in the respect. The second last one would be there's been a call from the media, including some of the honorable members, around the issue of a call for ESCOM to be privatized. But obviously some of us represent the poorest of the poor who are also dealing with the basic services. You can just share with the committee what is your view in that respect. And lastly, is the issue of the I understand ESCOM as an economic imperative and a job creator. So what is ESCOM doing to protect industries from load shedding so that it does not end up in job shedding? Let me pause there for now.
Thanks, Honorable Teddy. Honorable Nobanda.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I have two questions. One is on the procurement services. Seeing that transformation is non-negotiable also in our state-owned companies, what is the impact of the triple PFA exemption withdrawal on ESCOM's role to transform its procurement policies? The other one is on challenges that we face as members when we have to meet our constituencies. the questions that he asked regarding ESCOM. How is ESCOM going to assist us as members to be more informed, especially when we meet those constituents? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Van Dam.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got a question about ESCOM being a customer-centric organization. In the presentation and in the integrated reports, indication is given that ESCOM conducts customer service surveys to see, to assess the quality of service it provides to the public. In the reports, no indication is given on those results. What were those figures? Or was it 50%, 60%? Can you just give me clarity on the results of those customer surveys?
Thank you very much. The last honourable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like us to return to the issue that's very much in the media at the moment regarding the awarding of a tender to Arriva, specifically at Kruberg. Obviously, there's mounting public evidence that Eskom has acted irregularly. As a member of the Energy Portfolio Committee, obviously this raises grave concern. My questions revolve around three main points. The first is the CEO willing to tell us why exactly the technical committee of his own organization was overruled in terms of the recommendation, in terms of allocating the award to Westinghouse instead of Arriva? Again, we also are incredibly concerned that there seems to have been a case where Eskom board members purposely or deliberately misled the minister in terms of the information made available to her in terms of making the announcement on the award, which we find deeply troubling. We'd like to, again, with the CEO, be on record to state if he's aware of the minister being misled or how these sorts of rumours have entered into the public domain. I'm also asking whether the CEO will voluntarily make all tender and bid documents available to this committee and the Energy Committee before we have to go to the minister and before we have to go to the seeking a public access application, because I fundamentally believe that the best way to resolve this is to bring the documents, let the committee take a look, and if there is foul play, we can resolve it. If there isn't, this whole issue can be put to bed. Because frankly, a further delay to Kruberg is going to have significant impacts on South Africa's energy supply and energy security. And again, I'm wondering, is Eskom already applying its mind in terms of how long exactly or what kind of delay we can expect to the refitting of Kruberg, considering that Westinghouse will now seek an interdict against Eskom on this very issue, and should they be successful, there might be a long and arduous court battle. So I'm suggesting that Eskom should probably come clean up front, and can they also please indicate to us what kind of impact a delay of the refitting of Kruberg might have on energy security. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Those are the questions, but before you can answer, I also have one or two to ask Eskom. But before that, I will appeal to our colleagues to be transparent and open to us here as the committees, because our role is not only to oversight you, but also to assist you in the process of resolving the problems. And in our answering, we need to be transparent so that when you cannot be able to resolve the problem if you don't know what is the problem. So this is my appeal. The question is, in relation to opening up the grid, what percentage do we have as we speak now? And in relation to keeping the lights on, that policy, I'm told we were using diesel, the OCGTs. And the amount which is stated here is around 10.6 billion. I don't know for which years, but for 2013, you are saying it was 5.6 billion. Can you explain to us, and why are we delaying not to open up the grid? Instead, we spend so much money on diesel to keep the lights on. Those are my few questions. Thanks very much, Chairperson, and the colleagues. I think you can begin answering. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We're going to respond to the questions from the ESCOM team as a whole. I'll deal with some of the questions, and the FD will deal with some, and maybe one or two short and handling issues around communication. Just on the first question, that, well, it's not the first question, but the question that has arisen twice around the process of the procurement of the steam generator replacement project, or the SGR. I just need to indicate that Eskom has a very robust procurement process that it follows. And we have a proud history of a fair and objective evaluation process. We have angled a project of a value much higher than this one. We have followed a similar process within our procurement structures. And we believe that that process is beyond reproach, that it has been implemented with the integrity that has always accompanied such procurement processes. We also acknowledge the right of the bidder that is aggrieved by one or the other issue to object and to raise that objection in structures that are allowed for in the law, including going to court. Equally, Eskom has the right to protect its interests, even in the face of a court action. We have in this instance a party that is aggrieved for various reasons and has approached the court. We have subjected ourselves to that court process. The hearing of which will be on Friday. We are therefore constrained in terms of our ability to provide answers on the merits of the case, lest we prejudice that process that is already underway. Safe to say that we believe that there has not been any wrongdoing or partiality on the side of the Eskom procurement processes and structures in dealing with this particular matter. We will, in due course, if so required, once the legal processes have been exhausted, make available the information that the honourable members may require to further ensure that there is open transparency in the processes that Eskom has followed. So we will do that. I think dealing with the other questions, and I'll deal with some portion of the questions relating to municipal debt, and I'll leave the FD to deal with the figures relating to that. We see the increase in municipal debt as a matter for concern, not only because it impacts on our finances, but also it can potentially impact on the ability of those municipalities to provide services to communities, particularly if we enforce credit control measures, including the termination of supply. This would have an adverse impact on consumers, some of which may be paying their bills. But when we terminate supply to a municipality, they also suffer. So we have engaged on a process quite intensively to engage municipalities directly
We have set up a provincial forum in each of the provinces affected, which forums include the MECs in the province, MECs for COGTA, MECs for finance, as well as in certain instances senior officials from the Premier's office, the DG in the office of the Premier, also get involved there. The mayors of the various affected municipalities, as well as the municipal managers and the finance managers of those municipalities. And the strategy that we have adopted starts with an assessment of what is inhibiting the municipality to pay. What are the root causes? That's at the beginning, and it goes through right up to enforcement of credit control measures, which is termination. You'll be aware that we have already issued termination notices to three municipalities in the Free State. We are engaged with about four provinces that are impacted quite highly with unpaid debt. In Mpumalanga, we've got seven municipalities. We have met with the MEC for COGTA there and the officials from the Premier's office. We have agreed with the defaulting municipalities that the payment arrangements will be made to ensure that the payment is made of all outstanding debt by 2015 March. That's in Mpumalanga. In the northwest, there are six municipalities where we have also agreed with the MEC for COGTA to finalize payment agreements with defaulting municipalities to ensure payment by the end of March 2015. In Gauteng, there are three municipalities. We have met with the provincial treasury and the MECs for COGTA. Those discussions are ongoing. One of these municipalities, which was in areas around Gauteng, has subsequently settled its outstanding debt in full as a result of this engagement. And the payment plans have been put in place with Mohale City, amongst other western area is finalizing the payment plans. In the Free State, we've got seven municipalities that are impacted. We have already served the notices for termination to Mwatem, Aridapufong, and Dikabe. We suspended the actual implementation of the terminations pending intensive engagements we have undertaken with the provincial government, MECs for COGTA and for finance, in the office of the Premier, organized local governments in the Free State as well as the municipalities concerned. We have agreed in looking at three categories of municipalities which will form part of a pilot to begin to address the structural challenges that these municipalities may have. A broad categorization of which is municipalities that are able to but not willing to pay. Second, municipalities that are able to but cannot. And municipalities that are completely unable to pay. Now, the categorization is intended to identify those municipalities that have serious structural challenges of either a lack of a tax base or lack of sufficient income to sustain themselves, so that those are then passed on to national government to attend to. But it also enables us to then identify those municipalities that are able to play to pay but not willing to, so that we are able to take measures to enforce credit control. The municipalities that have certain challenges where we are able to assist either in structuring the tariffs or ensuring that their budget is formulated in a manner that would ensure that what is intended for electricity consumption is ring-fenced and then paid over to and we are seeing in the Free State a level of success to some of those municipalities that were highly indebted, and the payment plans have been finalized by the four municipalities, and we are in the process of assessment of those payment plans, and we believe that with confidence that they have become more realistic, and we should be able to see that debt being reduced quite significantly to ensure that we continue to supply. But as I say, we have taken the view that when necessary, we will have to implement terminations and take measures to ensure that there's minimum impact on the customer side behind the municipalities themselves. We just to deal with the issues around the CSI projects that we're involved in. These are run mostly through the ESCOM Foundation, which is a foundation that is a vehicle to drive the corporate social investment project. So we will provide more details to the honorable members after this. Safe to indicate that this would include issues like bursaries for needy students. It would include issues like child care facilities in areas where we are involved in one or the other project. For example, in the areas where we are building new power stations. These are some of the CSI projects that will be involved, but the details will be provided to the honorable member. The issues around the IPPs, that they are long, 20 years, that what if something goes wrong? We have an integrated resource plan from the Department of Energy that guides the process of engagement with independent power producers. And as ESCOM, we follow that framework in almost to the latter. We are an off-taker of the power that is being procured. We have to be able to provide access to the grid to any IPP that is approved by the Department of Energy, and to enter into a supply agreement on terms and conditions that one would be mutually acceptable to both ESCOM and the IPP, but also to the Department of Energy itself. In this instance, the commercial arrangements with the IPP has been the preserve of the Department of Energy, including the pricing agreements as well as the period of the contracts, 20 years. We understand that this year is informed amongst us by the requirement to recoup the capital costs that this IPP actually have to lay upfront to be sustainable and profitable. That's the norm that is about the 20-year period. We because it's something that is new that we have started with the Department of Energy, we will continuously engage with them to ensure that we preempt any major hiccup in terms of the delivery of that power in the period of the concession that has been entered into. but we have been a price taker in terms of the rate that we are expected to receive for kilowatt hour, and I think the FT will deal with that. There is indeed at the beginning a discrepancy on the high side of what we are paying to the IPPs.
Mm.
That's what we it is costing us as Eskom to produce a kilowatt hour of electricity. The figures are available, and Tulu deal with those. There is also the issues raised around the unplanned outages. That there has been an increase, yes, in the year under review on outages that are not planned. We have indicated that this is true. Even in our report, we indicate an increase in the unplanned outages, a reflection of a number of factors, one of which is an indication of an aging infrastructure. Secondly, an infrastructure that has not been maintained in terms of the original equipment manufacturer specification, that is a philosophy maintenance, has not been applied on that equipment as a result of various policies that deferred maintenance to ensure that there's a continued supply of electricity, what is commonly termed keeping the lights on. There are other causes, including certain inefficiencies within the maintenance regime that is currently in place. The contractors that we have employed to do a lot of this maintenance, sometimes the units go out on planned maintenance, and they come back and perform worse than the time when they went out in the first instance. So we have these issues that we are grappling with, and it has been an incremental problem throughout the years. It has reached a stage where we have had to take a decision to stop the downward trend, and to say that we will adhere to philosophy maintenance. We will attack very aggressively unplanned outages. And that is exactly what we are doing with the acceleration of generation performance strategy that we are implementing. We are beginning to see some changes. For example, partial load losses have indeed been decreased over this period, close to 1,000 megawatts that have now been recouped out of partial load losses. We are sticking to a maintenance regime and enforcing standards, quality standards, in the execution of the maintenance when units are out on a planned outages, so that we must begin to see an outcome that then takes the availability of energy factor upwards from where it is at around 77. We are targeting, and we've got the timelines by which we should arrest the downward trend and begin to then arrest the downward trend. We then stabilize the system, then we actually see an improvement in the output, being the energy availability factor itself. That plan is in place, is being implemented. We obviously have to link it with the seasonal nature of the country, the winter and the summer period. We have gone through winter balancing supply and demand, particularly at the peak time between 5 and 7. We have managed to do that, albeit with some reliance on OCGTs, which are expensive. We are going into summer where the system gets even highly more constrained than in winter, because the profile of summer is static across the day. So you have a static high demand across the day from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock in the evening, mostly because this is the time when we take most of our units out for planned maintenance. And we are putting levers in place to close the supply gap that we know will result out of the implementation of this maintenance regime that I'm now talking, that we are now talking about. And this is through a number of levers on the demand side, as well as on the supply side, where we are aggressively going for IPPs. The existing ones we have extended over a two-year period, Greco and other short-term IPPs that we have secured. We have just over 600 megawatts that we have secured just for summer. We're intending to ramp it up to 1,000 megawatts to ensure that we have sufficient cushion to ensure continued supply of the power. We will still continue to use the OCGTs as another lever, but we intend to consciously reduce the reliance on OCGTs by bringing in other supply levers, as I've indicated. But even after taking all those steps, the system will remain tight. And that's why we are going to embark on a campaign continuing from what we did in the winter campaign. But this campaign is going to be slightly different. It's not just beating the peak in three hours. It's going to be a campaign to conserve energy across the whole day. So that in the afternoons, when people are at work, we need to ensure that all measures are taken to reduce usage of equipment that is not required. We are also looking at, and we have already engaged with industry to see if we can agree on shifting their production schedules to evening hours to release some of the power that we require in the afternoon. This would entail engaging directly with the heavy industry to say, can you shift some of your production schedule to the evening, for example, after 8 o'clock? Obviously, we will need to find ways of incentivizing that type of behavior through some negotiated terms amongst us. That is power that is there that is underutilized at night. We want to shift production to that time of evening to release the power that we would then otherwise have during the day. And these are the measures that we are already implementing to ensure that we are able, to the extent that we can, to continue to meet the demand even over the summer period. The contract for contracts for some of the Window 3 IPPs that have not been signed. We have indicated that we are indeed an off-taker there. So we, once the Department of Energy has completed the process, we will then sign. I think the FD will deal with the costs that the Honorable Member says we have submitted, and that may be the reason why there's a delay. We will indicate what we have submitted and on the processes of engagement with DPE on that one. The FD will also deal with the issues around the cost recovery for ESCOM in this IPPs that we deal with. There was also issues raised around the coal supply, wet coal, and how are we going to mitigate the recurrence of the problems that we saw in 2008 as well as last year. A number of strategies have been put in place. Among them is the logistical reconfiguration of how we of stock handling at our sites. This would include lifting some of the the stockpile containers to a certain level, as well as to ensure that the water is not kept static in the various processes, including the conveyance of coal to the stockyard itself. But also there's also a concerted effort to ensure that our coal stock days are actually maintained at a high level at 42 days. And this we are already seeing in the number of our stations currently. We are meeting those cold stock days. There are still a few stations that have not yet reached that target, and we hope that by the time we reach the middle of summer, we would have ramped up the stock in those power stations to 42 days. The quality of the coal has become a challenge, and we are addressing it. It does come at a cost, but we are looking at measures to either further beneficiate coal, washing it amongst others, and ensuring that we restrict the conveyance of bad coal into our plants, which results in damage to our equipment. And there's quite a complicated exercise that is underway right from source, from the mine, to transportation to our gate, to the conveyor, to sifting material and equipment that we are putting in place to ensure that we don't end up with stone, for example, and rocks in our plants. This is a continuing process. This is not an event. It's going to take long to ensure that there's a culture of quality. It also includes training of our personnel at our coal stockyards and a review of the entire stock handling process that to ensure that quality is maintained throughout that process. The issues around Medupi, when do we switch on or off, whether it's December or June next year, we have been trying to explain this issue around synchronization, and we will continue to try and find a much simpler way of dealing with synchronization. But simply stated, this will be the first time when the generator runs and through the injection of steam. I'm trying to I'm not technical, so but I'm trying to simplify it as well. It is the first time when actual power is put into the grid.
Mm.
If I can put it. Actual power being put into the grid, and this is not full power. It's six, it's not the 800 megawatts. It could be anything from 100 megawatts to 200 megawatts that goes into the grid for the first time, having been generated from unit 6. That is the what we can call the first synchronization of the unit. Now, it enables a number of things to be done. It enables the technicians to balance the plant itself and the grid. And as that process of balancing the plant and the grid continues, more power is pumped into the grid. That process can take anything between 3 to 6 months to reach optimum power. And we envisage that optimum power, which we call commercial operation, full power of Unit 6, will be reached by June 2050. So yes, it is true that first power will be put into the grid in December. that's a simple explanation. We will continue trying to get them much more simpler than that. I don't know who coined the phrase synchronization, but it's basically first power into the grid. The issues around the water-backed coal contracts, those negotiations are continuing. There have been ups and downs, but we are confident that we will still have sufficient coal for the water-backed area. And there are other coal suppliers that are already in existence there that will be able to supply the coal. We need to expand that. The coal for the coal supply for Midi is already secured and has already been transported to the coal stockyard at Midi. So we are ready for first coal fires into the unit between now and October. There are a number of milestones around that we will be looking at critical milestones, including putting heavy oil fires first to turn the thermite, and then going into first coal fire, putting coal into the thermite. The water bank area is also one of the challenges. There is water. We have taken certain investment decisions together with the TCCA for the construction of a water pipe there that would ensure the supply of water on a sustainable basis. And ESCOM is involved in that infrastructure project as well to ensure that we have sufficient water to supply the mines in that area. The issues around the FGD, the fuel gas desulfurization in Midi. I think that particular one was excluded simply because of the cost. And we can go back to see how we have put in plans to mitigate any potential short-term environmental impact. But it is a matter that we will have to address in any case, and to ensure that there is compliance with the environmental initiatives that we are committed to. Privatization, ESCOM privatization, we have we are not married to the concept or any concept whatsoever. But what we think we are doing is that we are mobilizing all stakeholders to get involved in the provision of energy in South Africa on a sustainable basis. And if the reference is to the private sector involvement in that process, then we should indicate that that is already happening. I've indicated, for example, the renewable energy IPPs. But over and above the renewable energy IPPs, the Department of Energy, jointly with ourselves, are also looking at additional procurement of power from IPPs, whether it's new coal-fired stations or gas-fired stations. That process is outlined in the integrated resource plan of the government, and it does involve the participation of the private sector. We are already procuring, as I said, probably over just under 1,000 megawatts of power from private sector from power producers, particularly gas. Agreco, amongst others, is providing us with just over 300 megawatts of power. We have other contracts with other smaller power producers on the short-term IPPs, just giving us over 80 megawatts. So we have already been using the private sector to help us augment the shortfall that we have, and we will continue to do so going forward. Part of what we are going to have to do to enable us to close the gap, we need time and space to thoroughly implement the acceleration of the recovery of our performance fleet, and that is going to require quite a lot of additional power, and that will have to be sourced from the private sector. So the private sector participation is a matter that we have been doing and will continue to do. The protection of industry from load shedding, we have taken into account the economic costs of load shedding. And as I've indicated, we will avoid load shedding to the extent that we are able to. We think that we should be able to reduce load on a managed basis so that we do not have to get into rotational load shedding. We are currently in finalizing discussions with the regulator to amend the protocols that will then allow us to reduce weight load and avoid rotational load shedding. Where we have no choice, and as a last resort, we will load shed. But again, we want to limit that reduction to stage one, which is load shedding about 1,200 megawatts, which we think we can spread in such a way that it has very minimal impact on industry, and therefore on the economy and the prospects of job creation and economic reaching of economic growth targets. Part of the engagement with industry is also around these issues, around how are we going to manage load to meet their requirements whilst we minimize the impact on the economy. And these discussions are ongoing. But we understand the importance of ensuring that the economy is not adversely affected by load shedding. But as we said, we will not we will protect the integrity of our grid, even if it might require load shedding. The issues around the spend on OCGTs, Tsulu will deal with that. The procurement and the challenges of the triple PFMA, I think what we were able to do at that time, the triple PFMA is intended to achieve certain objectives which we agree with. We had applied to National Treasury and been granted an exemption from the triple PFMA, which exemption came to an end in 2012, at the end of 2012. During the period when we were exempted, we were able to accelerate the procurement transformation process within ESCOM, and we have seen a very an incline in the spend profile on the broad-based black economic empowerment entities. We had also taken made huge strides in terms of what we termed as set asides. Sometimes those set asides would be for women, sometimes it would be just for black businesses, to ensure that we integrate them into the economy. Now, these have been slowed down as a result of the expiry of that exemption. There has been a definite slowdown. We are trying to find ways of regaining the momentum within the confines of the triple PFMA, or to get additional exemptions from the National Treasury, or to find other ways in which we can still achieve the transformation objectives. So that has been the impact. I think the other issues, Sulfana will deal with that. And maybe you can deal with the issues around our communication to the customers and the issue of the customer-centric result.
Thanks, Chair. If I can deal with the rest of the a question, just to indicate as a start, maybe on a lighter note, EFCOM has implemented the national treasury instructions, and we are very committed to making sure it is, after all, part of our cost saving initiatives as well. If I can, how far is EFCOM in renegotiating the contract with BHP Billiton? As we indicated, it is with the regulator at this point in time. It is our understanding that the regulator would like to follow a public consultation process, but we are not aware of the timing thereof. So we do wait for the regulatory process to unfold. On the issue of the impact of the credit downgrade, what we mean by that, what the rating agencies actually look at is EFCOM's credit worthiness. So obviously we do have a debt book from our borrowing. They look at our ability to repay the debt. So the more our revenue generation diminishes, the more the credit profile or credit worthiness actually deteriorates. But they also look at the regulatory certainty, because these loans are over a long period of time. They would like to get certainty on the price of electricity that would assist EFCOM to generate revenue. In terms of the impact in the with regard to the rating that took place in June, we did not see any specific impact on our loans. But we, based on the analysis, we are concerned about the further downgrade should it happen in September. The cost of funding would increase quite significantly, but also our ability to access the debt market or the capital market would also increase. But we also run the risk also of the current loans being recalled, and because EFCOM is the government is a guarantor to EFCOM, we concern that government may have to step in if nothing happens. On the issue of there was an issue around the national emissions. I'm not sure if the chief executive covered it. But I think one of the biggest problems here is one, the funding that is required to be able to retrofit these stations. And in fact, it's quite a significant amount of investment which has not been accommodated in the MYPD3, or obviously would have to look at MYPD4. But we're talking really 72 billion rand to make 57%. But I think the issue is that the reason it will take that long is that you actually have to get outages to be able to do a retrofit of these stations that require to be retrofit. So on average about 150 days. Now if we look at the ability to meet demand, it would be a challenge to actually have stations being taken out to be able to do this. So we have actually faced it, and that is why it would take that long period. There was a question around the cost of the bill program. Yes, it is a significant concern. As you know, that a lot of this is due to the claims that we get from the contractors due to various reasons. However, just to indicate that the regulator allows us a return on assets from the tariff. How the tariff is calculated from a capital expenditure perspective, it's a return on asset and depreciation over the life of the asset once the asset is in commercial operation. So we have no intention at this stage to reopen the tariff application as a result of this. But over time, in the long term, you may see an impact. And I think it's important to highlight as well that the regulator does apply a prudency test, and they will decide whether EFCOM has been prudent in incurring the cost that they have incurred. just to cover the issue around the DOE renewable energy IPP program round three, as the CE has indicated, the contract, even though they have not yet been signed, but ESCOM is busy with cost estimate letters for the round three. The reason the costs are high essentially is that there's two elements. There's the energy sector and then there's the grid strengthening. In terms of the grid strengthening, if you look at the fact that in terms of our capital expenditure application, obviously the regulator has allowed a lower return, but they've also allowed they've also used a lower asset base in terms of calculating what that return should be. So there is a shortfall in terms of the capital expenditure requirement. That has had an impact on our grid strengthening from the transmission and distribution perspective. So we're not saying that that was not accommodated, but in fact it's sufficient. We do know, for example, that the regulator believes that in terms of grid strengthening, ESCOM should be spending, for example, a certain amount per kilometer installed versus what we know we're paying currently. So those are some of the challenges that we're experiencing in terms of grid strengthening. And it's really about also the timing thereof. But there's also the energy portion of it where we're seeing these IPPs actually coming in at a higher load factor than what we had anticipated. It does create a significant health impact from that perspective. And we can provide you with the numbers as soon as I've got them available. There was a question around with regards to the municipalities specifically. I think the CE has covered it quite significantly, but there are options that we're looking at. So just to clarify, the total amount of debt, ESCOM's payment terms are 15 days, but from a municipality perspective, we do take into account that they only can collect within 30 days, so we only assess them on debt that is over 30 days old. So that is the debt that is 2.7 billion rand, but in total, including the current debt, is about 10.6 billion debt. And I think the CE has covered some of the measures that we are taking to recover the debt. On our part, in terms of our customers, I think that if the Honourable Member has already indicated our debt recovery process. ESCOM's residential customers are about 4.9 million of the total 5.2 million customers. The bulk of that, I think close to about 4.7 million, are actually prepaid customers. Where we have issues, and it's really a historical issue, is in Soweto. We have found a solution now. We are implementing split meter technologies that is vandal proof and tamper proof, because in the past the issue is even when you apply your credit control measures to disconnect the customers, they actually reconnect themselves because of the meter infrastructure that we have there. So once we have implemented that, we are quite sure that we'll be able to secure future revenue streams going forward. I think the issue on the 49, what we're doing with our customers, I'm sure Head of Corporate Affairs, but we really partner with most of our customers to help them with energy efficiency through the 49M campaign. So that's some of the initiatives that we have. On the issue of the OCGT cost, yes, the numbers are correct. In 2013, we spent 5.9 billion rand versus 10.6 billion rand in this financial year. I think we must indicate that, and I think probably the CE has actually covered it, we are not delaying others coming into the grid. It is part of our program. We're working with the DOE on the renewable energy program. There's other short-term IPPs, and obviously we await the implementation of the IRP going forward. So we do have a unit internally that looks at facilitating the connection of the IPPs into the grid, and we also have a unit that looks at, which is called the single buyer, that looks at the purchase of energy from the IPP program. I think in terms of the customer centricity, if you look at page 143 of our integrated report, there is the customer service index survey. You will notice that our target for the year was 88.7 versus 86.6. It is slightly lower than the target, but we are working on that. It is a combination of the service index, the bedrock sector, which is really the time to connect the customers, but also some perception measures. So customers would really give us a feedback around how long it takes us to connect them. Some of them complain about the type of electricity. Some of them would really complain about their connection issues. But on the connection issues, we do know that until we solve the issues of illegal connections, we see quite a significant use in winter, where a lot of customers also connect themselves illegally. And it's some of those issues that they complain about when we analyze the customers and things. Yeah, I think I've covered most of the questions relating to the financial.
Chair, maybe to just close on regarding communication. We have an extensive and intensive communication campaign. One is the 49M, where we try to communicate with all our stakeholders to try and persuade and urge them to use energy responsibly. We have received a lot of support from the industry. We have more than 200 partners, different companies, hotels, industries, who support the 49M, and we refer to them as 49M partners. We recently launched an ESCOM app. We have received rave reviews, and we hope that members will also download the app if they have not downloaded the app at this point in time. It gives you, it's a door that gives you access to everything that we do at ESCOM. We are on Facebook, and we'll try, and my team in Cape Town gets the emails of members and those that are willing to get members permission to send to as much information as we possibly can on Operation Kanisa, on our website, on ESCOM News, our internal communication to our own staff. One other thing that is extremely important and which is highly appreciated by the industry is what we refer to as our quarterly state of the system. Every quarter, Madam Chair and members, we invite all our key customers and the public, where we'll talk to them about what happened the past 3 months regarding the state of the system, and where we give them our own perception and view of what is going to happen in the next 3 months. So they always, all our, especially our key industrial partners, they come to this meeting. And they really appreciate them, but every quarter we sit with them and we take them through as what happened on every key metric that impacts their own business. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members and colleagues from ESCOM. I think we have come to the end of our meeting. Honourable Mary, you want to raise something before we close? A follow-up question.
Thank you, Chair. It's a follow-up question. Put the question forward about the sun power of warm cylinders, at least just put it that way. Is ESCOM in a position to take care of them, and at what price? That is for our low cost residential areas, that in the, I would say, the next few years, even up to 5-6 years, that areas won't be electrified. Is there a possibility that ESCOM can procure them, and at what price? Even if municipalities in a position to buy them, at what price? Please.
Yes,
sir. Honourable Chair, I think we the issues around the solar water geysers is one of the levers, one of our demand side levers that we are looking at, and indeed we had a plan to go on a project of this nature. The funding was supposed to be acquired from the Department of Energy. There has been a bit of a delay in finalizing the agreement between ESCOM and the Department of Energy that would then enable us to be the implementing agent for the Department of Energy in the rollout of solar water geysers. We continue to engage with the department, and we are hoping that quite soon, hopefully before the next winter, we will see progress in the rollout of that program.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we need to have an approach in the next meeting on the way forward of our meetings, so that we don't avoid to meet for compliance purposes. We need to agree over and above the key performance areas and the performance targets agreed on the shareholder compact with ESCOM. Ourselves as a committee, we need to agree to say each and every meeting, let's identify issues which we need follow up, so as to enable them to go and work on those issues, and ourselves as well, when they come in the next meeting, we are able to do oversight to say, on this point, this is what you said, and how far are you, and so that we are able to go physically to go and check. I think we need to agree on that, and colleagues from ESCOM, I think, will agree with us to say, yes, this will be the correct approach, because also it will keep yourself on your toes to make sure you deliver and to make sure you address issues which all of us are concerned about. On that note, maybe we will allow the department to say something, if there's anything to say, because I see the acting DG has gone, and we have a colleague over there. Okay. Thank you very much. That's bring us to the end of our meeting with ESCOM. We still have to remain and go through the set of minutes as a department. Thank you very much.
Did I follow you?